Welcome to The Creative Shift. My name is Dan Blank, author of the book Be the Gateway and founder of WeGrowMedia.com. Today, I'm really excited to welcome Valerie Bowling onto the show. And gosh, she has just such an amazing story. There's a lot to cover here, but something that I just keep thinking about is, you know, she spent, you know, more than 25 years in her career as an educator, which she still works in, and how a visit from her nieces inspired her to write down some ideas for books. And then she kept writing. She set a goal to become a published author. And then something really interesting happened. She was querying and she did a Twitter pitch and got her publisher via a Twitter pitch, which I think is interesting. But what fascinates me even more is that in total, it took 150 queries to have her agent and publisher. And to get her agent, I believe the number that she had said is it took 50 queries to get her agent after she had a book deal. And why I love that so much is it's such a great reminder of the importance of consistency and showing up and knowing your goals. And, you know, when she talks about her attitude in the process, it is so upbeat, it is so focused, and she just sort of illustrates what I always hope these podcasts are about, which is this is the work. This is the work that we do to create the stories, to connect with people, to do things that we find meaningful. And the number 150 or 50 might be surprising to people, especially after you have a book deal. And I just love that she does this work. And I think her take on it was something like, actually, when you look at the total time from start to having a book deal and an agent, it was very short. She shares so much amazing advice in this episode. Her book is called Let's Dance. You can find her at valeriebowling.com. It's B-O-L-L-I-N-G. All right, here is my interview with Valerie Bowling. Hey, everyone. This is Dan Blank. I'm excited to be chatting with Valerie Bowling. Welcome.
Thank you, Dan. I'm happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me to join you on your podcast.
So you have this interesting kind of, you know, what I'm reading about your background, where we'll talk all about your career as an educator. And you grew up in a situation I think is interesting, where in your bio, it says you grew up really with extended family, the only child in a house of seven adults. Yeah. I'm already curious how this might have affected your worldview of working with children and everything, but take us through that situation. What was that situation like, and what was that like growing up like that? Because I feel like that is probably somewhat unusual.
It's definitely unusual, but again, and I think it's this way for all children, children get used to what they know. We all do. And so for me, that was very normal. I didn't think anything, I didn't really think about it in an odd way. And in my neighborhood, there were extended families, not to the extent of mine, but there were others. And it was actually when I went to college, and I actually haven't thought about this in a while, Dan, but you're bringing it up in me now. I had two experiences where I knew that the home I lived in was different. So one was freshman year, a very close friend of mine, and she's still a close friend, so I won't name her because I don't want to embarrass her, because that's not what this is about. But I would always refer to my family members as my parents. So I would talk about my great-grandmother or my great-aunts, and I would say, my parents said, or my parents this, and she said, you only have two parents. You have a mother and you have a father. They're not your parents. You can call them your aunts or your grandparents. And so even now, as I started to tell it and certain things stick, I got rid of the word parents and I started referring to them as my family members, my relatives. The other time someone dropped me off at home. We lived in the same vicinity. And so, you know, she was driving me home on her way home, and I invited her inside just to meet my family. And she came inside, she just stayed for a few minutes. And when I walked her back to her car, she goes, "Oh my goodness, it's overwhelming in there." And I, you know, and I just thought, it's normal to me. I wouldn't have described it that way. I mean, yeah, it's overwhelming with love, but yeah. What a great thing to have in your life. So it was just very, very interesting, but it was a very female centered home. There was only my great grandfather. Everyone else in the home were female. There was his wife, my great grandmother, the matriarch, and then her four daughters, my grandmother and my three great aunts, and then my mother. And so when my last two great aunts, my mother is still alive and well, and but my last two great aunts passed away in 2009, and that when the second one passed, that was the last funeral of that generation. So I wrote a poem called "I Come From Women." And I celebrated each of them in a stanza and sort of their personalities and what I enjoyed and appreciated about them. And my regret is that they didn't get to see this happen. I know they would be so, so proud. I mean, my mother is able to see it and she's proud, but there would be a different proud from them.
It's funny. It feels like it sounds like magical in some ways, almost like the opposite of what a lot of people have, where they're in a home with maybe one or two adults and they don't find a sense of support or a sense of validation for, you know, a lot of reasons, sometimes in general, other times with what you create and what you do. When you were growing up, did you write or was there anything creative in what you were doing?
Yes, I've always loved writing. And this is something as well that I share in my bio that, you know, I loved writing from the time I first, you know, held a pencil and connected it to paper. And the thing about growing up in that household is that each person had a different role with me. So it was my grandmother who taught me how to write. That was sort of her job, I guess. And, you know, there was a great aunt who was the one who read to me. There was another one who, you know, we always, you know, studied the states of America, you know, states, capitals, things like that. So everyone, there was another one who wasn't so much academic, but she was the one who always bought things for me and my clothes and my shoes. And, you know, so I just had all these people with different roles. And so I just loved writing from the beginning. And then I tried to make my letters perfect. I remember a lot of erasing and everything. And there's still that probably carries over to my revision today that I constantly am revising. And it's actually the part of the writing process that I most enjoy as a writer and also as a teacher. I love those lessons so that I take kids to the top. I'll diverge a bit to tell you this story. There was a student once who we were revising, and she came in and she said, "You know, my mom said my story's good enough. I shouldn't have to keep revising." I said to her, I said, "You know what? Your mom is actually right. Your story is good enough, but I'm trying to take your story to the next level. I'm trying to get your story contest ready," because we were submitting them to a contest. Meanwhile, she won first place in that contest. This was a sort of a local contest, but it was not just the town we were in, but maybe, I don't know, maybe three or four surrounding towns. So it wasn't statewide, but it was larger than just our community. And the second place winner was also in my class. And so her parents ended up inviting me out to lunch after the celebration. And we're still friends now. I actually went to her wedding last November, and she's actually, I can say it because I think it's public news now, she's pregnant with her first child. So, aww. I mean, it's just, I stay in touch with people. But anyway, so back to writing. So I went from learning how the physical act of writing to really enjoying writing and playing with words. And so in first grade, I had marble composition books that I would go through. I'd fill up and have to get more. Whatever the phonics lesson was that we were learning currently, I would explore with that in, you know, making these little rhyming sentences. And so again, when I look, Dan, and I see the connection that my first book, Let's Dance, is, you know, these little rhymes, it just takes me back to that. And a number of the other books that I've written, not all of them, I have longer prose, still picture books, but the fact that a number of my books are in that short rhyming text, it just I think it's got to come from a place deep inside of me, you know, going back to my beginnings.
Yeah, it's funny. That's so interesting too, because I always feel like what we were doing when we're younger, it's not just it's more central, it's that you've been probably working on that for longer, because you've been able to have the years between when you first started doing that and now, where you're honing that skill and that way of seeing words and books and language.
Exactly. Yeah.
So as you sort of got older and went through like high school and into college, how did you kind of put your focus for either your creative work or your career? Because I always feel like this is that pivotal point between, I'm interested in this, but I'm going to go this direction.
Yeah, so I just, in terms of writing was something that always continued, you know, writing stories, writing articles, writing poems, having things published in literary magazine, you know, either school literary magazines or even as an adult, having a poem published in an anthology or, you know, writing letters to editors. So I've always been a writer, but I never really thought that I would have a career. I mean, it was never a goal of mine to become an author, first of all. That happened later. In terms of becoming an educator, that's something I actually claimed in second grade. And then, and I'm not proud to say this, but I had people, well-meaning people, who felt, you know, oh, Valerie, you're so smart and you do so well. You should be a doctor. You should be a lawyer. You know, the careers of prestige. And so I kind of, I didn't even, in undergrad, I was an English major, but I was not thinking about education. And then it was later that I had worked for a couple of years after college, believe it or not, as an editor of the non-resident tax form for Massachusetts at the Massachusetts Department of Revenue. That was writing of a different kind indeed. I remember there was an opportunity there where you could, I forget why, but there was a class that you could sign up for just to make sure, you know, your editing skills were on point and grammar. And I thought, if I'm going to edit this form, if I'm in charge of this form, I should take this class. So there was a little entrance exam, and I took the because they wanted to see your skills. I took the exam and they said, oh, you should be teaching the class.
Oh, that's so funny.
That was kind of funny. But so I did that, but it didn't fill me up or feed my soul.
Did you ever think to maybe make the tax form rhyme a little bit? Give a try?
Actually, no, believe me, this stuff was so dry, there was no way to put this up. Let me tell you that. No, that was not an option. But to sort of, you know, I went another route and I lived abroad for a year, and I worked with young homeless people. And it was volunteer service. And so when I came back, when I came back home, I was 25, and I said, you know, what do I want to do? And that education was still in my mind. And I was thinking, I was deciding between education and social work based on the experience I had just had. And so I went to grad school for education. I decided that was more in line with who I was. And I just, you know, I'm in my 28th year now. I love it. But it was 3 years ago when I said, you know, I have these young nieces now. And you know, and I'm reading to them a lot. And I was just really sort of thinking about the stories I was reading to them. And after a visit that I'd had with them, I wrote a story in which each of them was the protagonist. And I said, you know, let me just see if, explore the world of picture book writing, see if this is a possibility for me. And I got really into it and I took a class. A friend had recommended I take a class, a picture book writing class. It was actually children's book writing. So I was the only picture book writer, but the others were writing, you know, chapter books. And I just kept, you know, I revised, I sent stuff out. Anyway, eventually, you know, a story of mine was acquired in June of 2018. And then, you know, it came out this March. So, and I do think there's this nice intersection of being author educator, because the two to me just, there's a natural commingling there. And it feeds both parts of me. I was talking to someone just this week about how's it being back at work and how's your job going and how's your writing going. And I was saying, I love them both so much. Like they're both so fulfilling. I'm not ready to leave teaching yet. I have a bit of a different position this year that is challenging, but I'm also excited by it. And I love the team of teachers I'm working with. So I want to kind of see how that plays out, but I have been rushing home like I did today to meet you for this podcast. And every night this week, I've had something. Last night, I had my writing critique group. And then both Tuesday and Wednesday nights, I had events, one of them with Jacqueline Woodson. I interviewed her. That was amazing. And then I was on a panel with some other amazing creators. So it just, it's been an interesting ride, Dan, and continues to be one.
I mean, I always like that idea of that creative shift where someone can kind of redefine what they create or who they are at a point that they decide. And you're doing this, you know, here, but you sort of skipped over what I believe was a 27-year career as an educator in that mix. So, I mean, this is, I'm always curious about, because you talk about going to social work or to become a teacher, really difficult professions. What was it like getting into teaching when you first started getting into it? And I'm curious, how has that changed to what you see to not today, meaning necessarily during the pandemic, but today, meaning like the last couple of years? What has changed in that time as a teacher?
Yeah, well, first of all, I should start out by saying I've gone through changes in the profession. So while I can comment on how students have changed, I don't have the direct contact with students in my current role. So for 12 years, I was an elementary school teacher. And then for 5 years in an elementary school, I started out in second, taught primarily fifth though, did have fourth a couple of years. And then I taught eighth grade English for 5 years. And then I'm now in my 11th year as an instructional coach. So I actually work more directly with teachers. And this year I also have a curricular component where I am working on or leading the work really with a team of teachers around social studies and English curriculum, which I'm really working to make cross-curricular and be a true humanities curriculum. So I tutor as well. So I do, you know, I'm in touch with students, but that's one-on-one. And as I always say, as much as I enjoy that, there's nothing like the energy of an entire class and all that comes with that. But I think, yes, kids have changed. Part of it is, you know, first of all, now everyone has a device. And that has been in our district, I don't even remember how many years now. I would say it's 5 to 7. Time goes so quickly, but I would say it's been at least 5 or 6 years. And then I think just the idea that we require more of students. We now want students to, we always wanted students to be independent, but now we also really want them to be resilient and we want them to really be reflective. You know, we're used to the teachers reflecting and teachers should always reflect on their process and so forth, but we want students doing that as well. And we're looking at students setting goals for themselves. And so we really want students to have more agency. We want students to have more choice in what they're doing. We want students thinking critically and collaborating with each other. And that whole communication and collaboration takes a different form in COVID times, but we're finding ways to make it work. So, you know, at the end of the day, though, children are still who they are. You know, they want to be accepted. They want to learn. They want to be in school, most of them. I mean, they really do. They're so happy. I was even talking to my students I saw this week, who are saw virtually and tutoring, and their seniors were working on college essays. And they are so happy to be in school. And even teachers are saying, you know, it was hard going back. I wasn't sure, but now that I'm back, I realize this is really where I need to be. I mean, granted, I'm sure there are people who don't feel this way. I'm not saying everyone feels this way, but I'm talking about the people to whom I've been speaking. So I don't know if that really answers your question, Dan.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I have to imagine teaching eighth grade English is particularly difficult, but I could just be my own personal bias.
I loved it. I loved really? It. I'm still in touch with a number of those students and a number of those students, actually four, I just thought of a fourth one, are teaching themselves now. Yeah. One's a social studies teacher. Two are in elementary, and one is English, and they're, The three of them, the first three I thought of them because they're in the same school district. I just thought of another one. Two are teaching English, middle school and high school. Yeah.
So you have that moment where you're reading to your nieces and you kind of make up these stories. And I feel like there's a really big jump between that moment and then saying, I'm going to do something with this, even though I got my job and all this stuff going on. I get the impetus of the inspiration of the story, but what was it where I'm like, I'm going to try to do something with this? And how did you get to that moment?
I think for me, it was, well, first of all, my husband and I, at the beginning of every calendar year, make goals. We make individual goals, we share them with each other, and we also have goals as a couple. And so again, having just come off of that visit and those, I had those ideas in my head, and I didn't get to write the stories until after they left, because when they were with us, they usually stay with us for about, roughly a week. So it could be 4 nights, 5 nights during the December holidays, and then the same in the summer. So this was during December of 2016. And so after they left, I wrote these stories, and I was thinking about, again, as we made our goals for 2017, I didn't write it as I'm going to publish a picture book. I wrote down something like I'm going to explore the possibility of, or I'm going to investigate. And then I made a list of people that I was going to reach out to, people, whether they're so librarian friends, a colleague who was recent, he wasn't published at that point, but I knew that his book was slated for publication. And he's the one who recommended that I take a course at a place where actually I'm now going to teach a course next, their next session, which starts in November. And so I just, was reaching out to a number of people.
So what would you say to a librarian? Because I feel like a lot of people get to that place where they have, I'm going to take it seriously. And you could say, hey, talk to some librarians, talk to an author. And they would say, what am I going to say to them? What do I want from them? They need to, what were you reaching out and saying to people? Because I think it's a big challenge for most people.
Yeah, well, and I wasn't, and to be very clear, and this, I think people have to keep in mind too, I was reaching out to people with whom I had direct relationships with, or with whom someone had said, you should speak to this person and you can tell this person then I'm the one who sent you. So that's the first thing. I wasn't just speaking to going into a library and saying, oh, librarian, I'm interested in becoming, perhaps writing and maybe getting something published. So the librarian I spoke to is a librarian who, like, she did a portion of the ceremony at our wedding. And actually, when I had my book launch event, I asked her to be the MC of the event, and it was held at, you know, a local library. It wasn't her branch, but because this, you know, I wanted a larger space, but I just talked to her about, you know, what do you think? I didn't have specific questions. Do you have any advice? Are there people you can connect me with? Are there books that, you know, you'd love to see written? Not that I can necessarily write them, but just those kinds of things, just asking for advice and who should I speak to. And so, the authors I spoke to were all said, join SCBWI, the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators. If you're a children's creator, you need to be a part of that. So I joined that. It was things like that, just finding out and making connections. And then you go to a conference and you meet more people. And, you know, you keep writing and you speak to people and get revision tips. So, yeah, it was just the beginnings.
Oh, I love that. So then where was that moment where it started getting real, where you were querying or you were making connections or you knew what you had to do with that next level?
So, as I said, I started in January of 2017, and I took a class that started in March, and I believe the last session was supposed to end in May, but we had a snow day, so the last session ended in June. And there were a couple pieces I had worked on during that time, and one I was even told it was ready, and I started querying. I didn't get any bites on it. And then also shortly after that time in June, it occurred to me to write. At the time, it was called I Love to Dance. And so I wrote it and I had a version of it and I shared it with a very good friend who, her first book was published this year as well. And she's a storyteller. She's a librarian, both worked in the public library as well as at a school library. She retired not this past school year, but the school year before and moved back to Ireland, which is where she's from. And she's, you know, she was writing herself. So she had a lot of good information. And I showed it to her. And at that point, I didn't have a critique group. I do now, but I didn't then. I'm still early. I'm still, you know, 6 months into this. It's June. And she gave me, and this is what I tell students when I speak to them and I talk about revision, because she did everything that I want students to take away that from the experience I had with Marianne McShane is the experience I want them to have takeaways from. So first she said, you don't need to keep repeating, I love to dance. She said, and look here, and it was at the bottom of the first page, I had the lines, tappity tap, finger snap, but it was buried in between, I love to dance, tappity tap, I love to dance, finger snap, I love to dance, whatever. She said, if you started with tappity tap, finger snap, you would immediately draw readers in. And that is the way that my book starts. It did not change from that. And then the second thing she said was, you should read, there's a book I want you to read, Water Song by Tim McKenna. You should read that book. And I read that book and I saw why she wanted me to read it. It's a rhyming book and she wanted me to learn from that book. So what I say to students is, number one, when someone gives you advice, listen. You don't have to do everything, but you need to consider everything. And secondly, you need to read. As writers, you need to read and you need to find mentor texts. Mentor texts are so important. And then the third thing, it didn't come out of Marianne's conversation, it was something I had discovered on my own, but you need to use your tools. So for rhyming, rhyme comes very naturally to me. I know it doesn't to everyone. And so I pretty much have my rhymes down, but I still like to check them or see if there's a better rhyme. And so I use rhymezone.com. So that's a tool that I would use. So those are the things that I want them to understand, that you need feedback on your writing, you need mentor text, and use your tools. And tools could be going back, or resources, going back to the lessons that your teacher taught. You know, your teacher has taught a number of lessons on revision. Are those on anchor charts around the classroom? Are they in a, you know, on Google Classroom in a file for you to access? You need to go back and look at those resources and refer to them.
So you're taking it seriously, you're querying, and you're getting rejections. Is that the what's that process like too? And I don't know whether you want to express that in numbers or feeling or whatever, because I always think too, it's like, it's always that part where you hear like, oh yeah, like how did you get your agent, whatever, and it's like, oh sure, I got 28 rejections, but then I got my editor. I'm like, how did you feel at rejection number 21? You know, right. Like it's like, because yeah, you lose sleep over stuff like that, or some people do.
So I'm happy to talk about that. I think first of all, I'm a very realistic person, and there are very few things that there, I mean, I go through life, I think, as a positive person, but there are very few things that get me really excited, where I really emote. And there are, as I did earlier with Jacqueline Woodson, you saw that there. And likewise, there are very few things that really upset me so much and get me so down and get me into a funk. It's just not really how I'm made. It's not who I am. So I knew that there would be a lot of rejection. And so I wasn't surprised by it. And, you know, it's like, oh, there's another rejection. I really don't think I took it as hard as most people. I shouldn't say most, excuse me, as some people do. There were some that were tougher than others when you felt you might have been close, like the one where the person was actually interested in Let's Dance, an agent. And this was early on. This was like maybe around query 20 something. But when I sent her other, you know, because if they're interested, they want to see other work. And when I sent her the other work, and of course, I didn't have tons of other work. I actually had the two stories I'd worked on in the course, which were actually about my nieces. And she wasn't as interested in those. And she just said, I foresee a harder sale with those. So, you know, when you come close, it's kind of, you know, those are tougher. There was another at 102, this is for agent, when it just, I could tell there was something off in the way even the email was written about being interested in me. Like there wasn't even a phone call. It's like, it can be an optional phone call. There wasn't a request for other manuscripts. And when I did my research, I said, no. But anyhow, so I'll go back. So really what I did, I probably should have started with Dan. I did what I call a three-pronged approach, which I'm not necessarily recommending it for everyone, but obviously it worked for me. And what I mean is, the ultimate goal is an agent, absolutely. But you can also query smaller presses or certain publishing houses that accept unsolicited queries. And, you know, there are some editors who accept unsolicited queries. So I really, mine was a mixed bag. So when I say that I actually found my agent, he was either 150 or 151 of my queries. And actually, I only sent out 4 queries this calendar year. I connected with my agent in June, even though we had connected actually in December with a rejection. That's a whole other story. I'll stay focused on what you're asking me. So that was a lot, but it was like 50 or where Let's Dance was acquired. So actually Let's Dance from start to finish, if you figure I had the first draft in June of 2017, I revised after Marianne's advice, and then I started querying, because she gave me that advice at the end of the summer, and then it was back to school. So then I started querying in January of 2018, and it was acquired in June of 2018. So that's really, if you look at from start to acquisition, it's a year. And if you look at from start of querying to acquisition, it's 6 months. So it's actually pretty quick in the picture book world.
Yeah.
But then it was, you know, it took me a long time after that to get an agent. And just how it was acquired, it was through a Twitter pitch. So I don't know if you know about Twitter pitches. That could be a whole other conversation. But writers get to pitch their books. There are different times and different categories. So that was part of a PB pitch. So just for picture book writers. And when you get likes from agents or editors, you can look them up. And if you think you might want them to publish your book, then you send your manuscript. And just because you send the manuscript, just because they like the pitch, doesn't mean they're going to want to publish the manuscript. But in this case, Jess did. She was interested. So she's not an agent. She's an editor with Boyd's Mills and Kane. She was. And so actually it was Kane Press at the time. And then they later merged with Boyd's Mills. So yeah, so that's how it got acquired.
So you got the book deal before you got the agent.
Absolutely. I mean, the book came out in March. I didn't get the agent until this June.
And then it took 151 queries to get the agent.
Yep.
But
they weren't all queries to agents. Some of the queries were to editors or to publishing houses. So there is, you know, and I haven't sorted out, well, how many agents. I was doing numbers for something recently. So last fall was when, or maybe it even started in the summer, probably early fall, my writing partner and I, who's amazing, Lindsay, she and I said we wanted to make a concerted effort to look for agents. And so we had a shared Google Doc. We wrote down all the picture book agencies that we knew of, and we wrote about each agent, and we divided it up. And so that was ready in November, I think we finished it. So in November and December, I queried 21 agents. And I would say that was like a serious, like, I knew what I was doing. I felt comfortable. I had researched. I was only querying people that I was interested in and that I thought I stood a chance with. And of those 21, nothing bit. And then I kind of really wasn't doing much. I sent three more at the beginning of the year. And then James, it was really interesting. We were connected through something on Twitter where he was offering, you know, if you want to send me, if you want advice, you can reach out to me. He was offering, this was in response to hashtag BVM, Black Voices Matter, after everything that has been happening. And this was in direct response to George Floyd, Breonna Taylor. So, I said, I private messaged him and said, you know, I sent you something in December. It wasn't a fit. I've revised it. I'm not saying it's a fit now, but I would just appreciate feedback so I know where to go. And I was shocked. He said, oh my goodness, I'm so glad you contacted me. You've been on my radar. I'm thinking, how the heck have I been on your radar? Like, I didn't get it. And he said, oh, I've been seeing everything about you on Twitter. And, you know, we share an editor because he has a story. His book, Goodnight Oppie, is coming out in fall of next year. So it was through that connection. So he said, yeah, sure, send it to me. And I'd love to see what else you're working on. But I just thought, I'm just getting feedback on this story. I was not considering him as an agent. I didn't think, you know, and some of the stuff, you know, not everything you see about everyone's presence is true, or there could be missing parts, because my takeaway was he wanted humor and just the kind, and I don't really have humorous books. But in the end, it was the letter he wrote me, the email after reading what I sent. Your writing is utterly beautiful. You know, I'm definitely interested. I'd love to have a conversation with you. And he was very clear that the conversation was going to be about an offer of representation. So it was just, and then we talked and it was just like we connected.
So what was it like going from that idea of like, I have these partners, the book's going to come out and now we're making a book. Now we're getting the whole package. Was that tougher, easier than you expected? What was that like?
Jess, my editor, Jess Negron, made it very easy. She kept me posted each step of the way. I was, you know, I was allowed to have input into the illustrator who was chosen. I weighed in on early sketches. I weighed in on the book cover. Suggestions I made were actually taken and changes were made as a result. You know, each step, you know, she told me, okay, I want you to write back matter. Now it's time for a dedication. So it was kind of, you know, there'd be these gaps in between. And, you know, everything was fine. It was not anything that was unexpected. But I think the part really that has been unexpected is the fact that even when the book is out, that is when I feel the work really begins in terms of marketing the book, in terms of getting the word out. I've really pounded the pavement. I just have really, you know, part of the reason I think it is from a very personal place, especially the book was released just, you know, just before, you know, a week before everything shut down with the pandemic. And so I wanted to connect this book to kids. It was important to me to be able to do that. So that's why I was trying to, you know, set up story times with libraries, with schools, with bookstores that were still doing them, so that I could get the word out about the book and just feel the joy of connecting with kids. And so, there's been a lot of work around that. And then of course there's the work of still writing. And of course there was the work of still hoping to get an agent, which fortunately happened. And I can say, I mean, there are no official announcements, but I have other books coming out, which is awesome.
I love it.
So, yeah, so it wasn't that the process from acquisition to the book being made was anything of angst or challenging or anything like that. It was more, you know, now that the book is out, oh my goodness, you know, let's get to work kind of thing.
So did you have kind of a marketing and school visit plan that you had to scrap when everything changed in March?
Well, I didn't have a full plan because being in school, Dan, I knew that I was going to be limited in terms of what I could really do, just as I am now. That's why I was telling you, you know, I do things in the evening and on the weekend. But there were some things, unfortunately, that I was really looking forward to that got canceled, like a television interview with my local TV station. And it wasn't just one of those quick, you know, interviews. This was a half hour program. I don't know that I was going to be on it the whole half hour. I think she usually sees two guests, but Gwen Edwards, and she actually contacted me a couple of weeks ago and said, oh, we're going to do some distance filming, you know, at this time in the morning on this date. It was in September. And I said, unfortunately, I can't do it because I have to be at school. So I don't know when that's going to be able to happen. I hope she'll keep me on her radar. The other thing that I was so looking forward to is 2 weeks after my book release, I was going to, I was scheduled to be all day at an elementary school in a nearby town. They have a townwide read in Wilton, Connecticut. The book they chose was All That Jazz by F. Scott Fitzgerald for the adults, and then they chose, and for high school students, and then there was a middle school version, and then there was they have two elementary schools. It's a small town, so they have a K-2 school and a 3-5 school, so there was also a book chosen for the 3-5 school, and Let's Dance was chosen for the K-2 school. So I had put in for my personal day, and I was going to be there all day And, you know, kids were going to, classes of students were going to visit me in the Learning Commons. And that was canceled. And I don't know when that's going to be rescheduled. So I did have some things like that on the calendar. And I did have some after school story times at libraries or and so forth. And fortunately, some of those did end up happening. We were able still to do it. So that, you know, so that worked out. And I repurposed, I had that, I was going to spend all day in Wilton. And then I had another day where I was going to be half the day at my elementary school and half the day at my secondary school, which is an independent school that I attended grade 7 through 12. So I took those two personal days, and this is very interesting, and I repositioned them. So on each of the days, I had five events instead of just the, you know, being in one place. So the first day I started out at an independent school in Bronx, New York. I was at Riverdale Country School. This is all virtually. Then from there, I went to Barrett Bookstore in Darien and then Turning the Page Bookstore in Monroe. These are, those two places are in Connecticut. They're local to me. And then from there, I went to a place in Canada, actually, to do an event. And then I ended up at my independent school. So, you know, and then the other day looked similar where I was able to be in, you know, five different places. So that was pretty incredible.
So what was the reception like? I mean, because I can see the Amazon reviews and stuff like that, but what was it experiencing it where you're either seeing reviews, you're getting emails, you're seeing the kids' faces? Because again, this is like the first big book and it seems like it really connected.
Yeah, the biggest thing for me, more so than reviews, I encourage people to write reviews and I appreciate them, but I have to be honest, maybe I shouldn't admit this, I don't read every review. First of all, I don't want to read anything negative. And if it's positive, that's wonderful. Like if someone writes it on a blog and they've featured me, of course, I read that. But, you know, the Amazon reviews, I can't, you know, stay on top of all of those. But the connecting with kids, the first day, Dan, that I did an event with kids, and I said to my husband, I was on a high for the rest of that day. Oh. It was just like, oh my gosh. And then, you know, you start to get comfortable with a thing. So I started to use Zoom to my advantage and I would scroll through and I would see everyone's names and I would call out their names. I'd encourage them to dance and I'd scroll through and I'd say, oh, I'm looking to see who's moving. Oh my goodness, look at so-and-so, look at you. What, you know, I would call their names out and they just feel so special. And they are special. They should feel special. So it was really great for me to have that and, you know, sort of a pandemic pick me up for me as well as hopefully the kids. And I did sort of really give a couple of messages. One is movement, and that particularly while you're learning virtually and you're on the screen a lot, you need to get up and move. And, you know, I call them distance learning movement breaks. And then I also would talk about when I got to the page of back matter in my book, I would talk about the different sort of spring off activities they could do. And then I also talked about just the ways in which we connect. Like that's the message of the book, that regardless of your background, regardless of who you are, we're all human and we all have something in common. And my pitch for the book was actually, dance is a universal language. We just all have different accents. And so that's really what I was trying to show, particularly during a time when, you know, there's unrest and things are being talked about and so forth. I wanted kids to know, like, yeah, that it doesn't have to be that way. That's one reality, but what can we do to combat that? Like, that's not the world we want to live in. We want to live in a world that looks like Let's Dance, where people are having fun. People are, you know, different, you know, genders, ability levels, skin colors. We've got a child at the end, which I had said, I want a boy in a tutu. And this was a surprise for me. When the book arrived, I turned to that page and I looked and I said, I wanted a boy in a tutu. This isn't a boy. And I was like, oh my goodness, the child's gender is indiscernible. That's even better. That's even better than what I wanted. And that was like an illustrator surprise for me. And I've heard things like that, that illustrators do things even better than you could have imagined. That's a perfect example of that, Dan.
So now you are, I mean, you're still, the book is out there and doing what it's doing. How do you look ahead at your next project and all of that?
So again, it's everything in life is a balance, and it's a challenge, but I feel that the way to live a fulfilled life is to have balance so that you do all the things that are important to you. Now, there are times when some things have to take more of a priority, and some things may have to wait a bit, but you need to be able to do those things. So for me, I'm simultaneously still talking about Let's Dance, which is important because I don't have another book coming out in 2021. My next books will come out in 2022. So I'm also a writer. I mean, I'm now an author, but in my heart of hearts, I'm a writer. I've always been a writer. So I'm always going to do some sort of writing. I actually had something in my head yesterday, not even for a picture book, but sort of a little poem about laughter, actually specifically about my laugh, because I saw this picture that someone had taken of, it was a screenshot of myself and Jacqueline, and we both were just exuding such joy, and my head was back, and there was this laugh coming out, I could tell. And so I wrote about that. And going back to your first question about my family, one of the lines in it is about, you know, when I hear my laugh, I hear my grandmother, and that makes me laugh louder and longer still, because I definitely have her laugh. She had a raucous laugh too. So it's that balance of making sure you do the things that are important to you. And also, you know, spending time with my husband is important, and spending time with friends is important, and exercising is important. So, and obviously I have a full-time job and I'm tutoring. And so, you know, a lot of people, they're like, do you sleep? I do make sure I get sleep. I'm not saying I get 8 hours every night, but I get at least 6 or 7. I mean, I'm not getting 3 and 4 hours because that wouldn't be good for anyone. But there are times when I just have to say, this is what I'm doing. And I find that on weekends too, sometimes putting things on the calendar of what I'm going to do when, like this is a portion of time when I'm going to work on writing, and this is when I'm going for a walk with the friend, and Sheldon and I are going to see a movie in the evening or whatever. If you have those things sort of planned out, you, and I'm not a person who is afraid of planning. Planning and organizing is a very comfortable place and space for me. So it works for me. I know for some people it'd be, oh, you can't do anything spontaneously. I'm fine for doing something spontaneously, but if I really want to guarantee that something happens, I need to reserve the time for it. I have to make the space for it, because then it's a maybe it'll happen, maybe it won't. And if I really want it to happen, I need to plan for that.
Love that. All right, we covered a lot of ground. Is there anything I haven't asked about that you think we should talk about?
I'm not really sure, because you have asked about a lot. I guess, again, I've made, you know, sort of alluded to things going on in our world. And so I think, you know, I'll say a little bit about that, because there are people who are asking about, you know, what can I as a parent, as an educator, as a librarian do? Or what about anti-racist books and, you know, how do we use them and things like that? So what I have said to people is, yes, the first step is diversifying your library. And by library, I mean, your library at home, the library in your classroom, the library in your school, or your public library. So go to your public library and ask them and your bookstores to make sure they carry certain books and support authors of color. Absolutely. But if you really want to sort of have more of an impact, it's about the conversations you have when you read the books. And so in order to have those conversations, that means the adults have to do their work. So the adults have to read certain books, have certain conversations, not get on the defensive, not, as I heard someone say, and I wanted to quote him, and he said, don't quote me, I don't remember who said it, but it's not me. But someone said, you know, when you come from a place of privilege, equity to you seems like oppression. And so people have to say, what am I willing to give up? What am I willing to change? Who am I? How am I willing to, you know, sort of relook at and re-envision the landscape or the decisions I'm making about the friends I have or the friends my kids have or the places I take my children and the experiences I give them? And, you know, there's a lot of self-searching and soul-searching that people need to do if they really want to make change. So once they've done that, then maybe they can come to books and have conversations. So again, you could take my book, Let's Dance, and at its, you know, face value, it's fun, it's short, it's rhyming, it's joyful. We can just read it and maybe we'll do a little dancing. Or you can, as I said earlier, talk about, notice the different people here. Look at the different skin tones. Let's talk about that. And, you know, where might this person be from? Or what, you know, note there's someone here in a wheelchair. What have you seen anyone dance in a wheelchair? Or what do you think it might be like to dance in a wheelchair? Why don't we sit down and see how it feels when we dance sitting down? You know, and the page I told you about the ballet spread, there is, I say, a Misty Copeland lookalike. There is a girl in hijab, and there is the child who some think it's a girl, some think it's a boy, and some aren't so sure. And you can have discussions around that. You know, you don't have to skip over it. You can really make meaning of it and have the discussions. You know, what do you think? And does it matter? Why does it matter if we know if it's a girl or boy? What difference does that really make? So that's, you know, that's a little bit about what I would say about that.
Thank you for everything you've shared. It's an inspiring story, and I just love how it's almost like the process of how you go about this is also really inspiring. Talk about balance. And I'm like, you don't just overthink and worry about everything, because that's my experience. So it's not just what you're doing, but how you do it, I think, is really amazing. So I just want to thank you for sharing that with us.
Oh, thank you. I'm so happy to have been here and to have had this conversation with you, Dan.
Thank you. That was awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
So I'm going to put this out probably not next week, but the week after. I'll just send you a link so you can kind of take a look. And yeah, thank you so much. Is there anything else I can help with or do or anything?
I just hope when my husband came in, and I know he went in the kitchen and I'm not in earbuds.
There was no noise. He is silent.
You didn't hear anything?
I'm hearing my 3-year-old the whole time we're talking, but your husband is silent.
Oh, really? I didn't hear anything on your end. And I didn't say bless you because you turned, so I wasn't sure they would have heard it. So that's why I went like this, like, okay, that was my bless you to you.
I appreciate that. You're a pro.
Yeah, if you think that everything, the sound was fine, then that's good.
We're good. Thanks for taking the time. I'm sure you had a long day, so thank you so much.
No problem. I'm thrilled to be able to do things like this. I like to meet with people and get the word out about the book. Now, is there any, I don't recall that I gave you, I don't know how you post. I don't know if you need a bio. I don't know if you post where a website or social
media. Yeah, usually I'll grab it from your website. I'll get your website. I'll put all your social media, all that stuff. So I usually get it from there.
Perfect. That's fine. And then, yeah, I don't know if you do anything about book purchase, but that's on my website too. So however you normally do it, just do what you normally do. I don't expect you to change anything, but I was just wondering if you needed me to send you anything at this point.
No, I think it's all on your site, so I think we're good.
Oh, great, Dan. And I'm curious, Dan, how did you find out about me? How did you reach out to me?
I don't remember. that's the bad thing. It's so funny how it works, where you start looking something up on one podcast, and you notice something, and you listen, or was it from an event that you were in? Like, I just don't know. And that's the weirdness about, like, all I do is work with writers, and it's such a, it's all fused together.
That's fine. But you know, it was such a, I'm going to tell you this, it was such a compliment to me, because I have been pounding the pavement so much since the spring. Well, even before the spring, before the book came out. And I'm at a place now, and I said it was going to happen in the summer. I said, once the end of August comes, I'm not, people have to come to me. And I don't mean it in that way, but part of it is because I know my time is so limited. I just don't have a lot of time being back in school in this way, and with the extracurricular, you know, duties, and, you know, books coming out and not knowing what editors are going to say to me about those books and so forth. So it's been nice to have, you know, the fact that you came to me, and a couple of other people have come to me for other reasons, not for podcasts. The podcasts I've done are all ones that in the past, you know, I had initiated. So it's just really nice that, you know, to think that, wow, maybe all that work is paying off, and that people will know about me or hear about me and will reach out. So that's, yeah. So I'm
oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. And it was great chatting with you. I liked your questions. You made me feel very comfortable. So thank you so much, Dan.
Oh, thank you. All right. I hope you have a great rest of your day and weekend.
Thank you. I'm about to change and go out for a walk with my husband. That's first on the list.
thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. You can find Valerie Bolling at valeriebolling.com. Her last name, again, is spelled B-O-L-L-I-N-G. Over on Twitter, she is Valerie_Bolling. And on Instagram, it's at Let's Dance Book. The book is called Let's Dance. My name again is Dan Blank. You can find me at wegrowmedia.com and on social media at Dan Blank. If you enjoyed this episode or any other, please consider leaving a rating over on Apple Podcasts. Thank you so much for listening until the end.